Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're embarking on a fascinating journey into an ancient narrative, one that holds surprisingly sharp lessons for our modern lives.
That's right.
We're diving deep into the biblical story of Esther, specifically focusing on, its second chapter.
Mm-hmm.
We want to uncover how things like personal preparation, quiet obedience, and seemingly ordinary circumstances can actually be interwoven into a much grander plan.
Absolutely. Our mission today is really to distill the core events of this really compelling account, and then connect its insights directly to your experiences, to your life today.
Yeah, we want to show how this timeless wisdom can sort of illuminate the path of obedience and hopefully strengthen your faith, even with all the complexities we face now.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's unpack this captivating narrative. Where does it start?
Well, the scene opens with King Ahasuerus. You might remember he'd previously dismissed Queen Vashti.
Right. She refused to appear before him, and he made that decree.
Precisely. So now, some time has passed, his anger's cooled down a bit, and he's sort of left grappling with the consequences of that decree against her. And, there's a vacancy on the throne.
Creates an opening, yeah.
Yeah.
Sets the stage for a new search for a queen.
It does. And the king's servants, they recognize this need. They propose a kingdom-wide search looking for fair young women to be gathered at the royal palace in Shushan.
So not just local, this is empire-wide.
Empire-wide. They suggest appointing officers in all the provinces to bring these maidens in, and then they'd undergo this really significant period of preparation.
Right, this wasn't just a quick look-over.
No, definitely not a casual beauty pageant.
Yeah.
It was highly organized, all under the careful supervision of Haggai.
Haggai, the king's chamberlain and keeper of the women.
That's the one.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. A seemingly ordinary young woman enters this, quite extraordinary situation.
Mm-hmm. Esther.
Esther. Her Hebrew name was Hadassah, a young Jewish woman, an orphan.
Right, raised lovingly by her cousin, Mordecai.
Mordecai, yeah. A Benjamite, part of the community carried away from Jerusalem during the captivity under King Jeconiah. He'd really taken Esther in as his own daughter after her parents died.
A really poignant backstory there. So when Esther is brought to Haggai, she finds remarkable favor in his eyes, pretty quickly, actually.
It wasn't just looks, then.
It seems not just looks. Something about her demeanor, perhaps. He swiftly provides her with special provisions for her purification, gives her 7 maids from the king's house, grants her and her maids the best place in the women's house.
Wow, preferential treatment right off the bat.
Definitely. But what's crucial here, and Mordecai instructed her on this,
yes,
she was not to reveal her Jewish people or her kindred, her background.
Okay. Keep it secret.
Exactly. And she faithfully followed this command, even as Mordecai, he's concerned. He walks daily before the court of the women's house, just quietly checking on her well-being.
That little detail, her quiet obedience right there, it really sets a powerful tone for her whole journey, doesn't it?
It really does. And this preparation process you mentioned, it was extensive.
Yeah. Tell us about that. 12 months.
A full 12 months of purification. Following the customary manner for women back then.
What did that involve?
Well, the text says 6 months with oil of myrrh and then another 6 months with sweet odors and other things for their purification.
Sounds intense. A year-long spa treatment, but maybe not so relaxing.
Probably not. And then when it was a maiden's turn to go into the king, they could ask for whatever they desired to take with them from the women's house.
Okay, so they had some choice there.
Some choice, yes. But here was the catch, and it's a significant element of risk.
Uh-huh.
If the king didn't delight in them, didn't choose them essentially, they'd return to a second house. This one kept by Shashgaz, another chamberlain, the keeper of the concubines.
And from there?
From there, they would never come to the king again unless he specifically called them by name.
Wow. So really high stakes. One shot, basically.
Very high stakes indeed. So when Esther's turn finally came, her approach was truly remarkable.
How so? What does she do differently?
Well, unlike maybe what we'd expect, or perhaps what others did, she asked for nothing beyond what Haggai, the keeper of the women, advised her to take.
Really? Just followed his advice completely?
Completely. Now, you could see this as just humility, but it also shows this profound trust in the guidance of the one overseeing her preparation.
That's a great point. It's trust, not just passivity.
Exactly. And this simple choice, this lack of self-promotion maybe, it immediately set her apart. The text says she obtained favor in the sight of everyone who saw her.
That quiet distinction.
Mm.
It's subtle, but powerful.
Very powerful.
And the result, the outcome of all this patient, diligent preparation?
Well, the big moment arrives in the 10th month, which is Tebeth, in the 7th year of King Ahasuerus' reign. He took Esther into his royal house.
Right.
And the king's affection for Esther surpassed all the other women. The text is clear. She obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the other virgins.
More than all of them.
Yes. So much so that he placed the royal crown upon her head, made her queen instead of Vashti.
Wow. From orphan to queen.
Quite the journey. And to celebrate, the king hosts this grand feast for all his princes and servants. It's even called Esther's Feast.
A feast in her honor.
Yes. And he even made a release to the provinces, granted gifts according to the state of the king, a huge public celebration marking her ascent.
Amazing story. But it doesn't end just with a coronation, right? There's another piece here.
That's right. And this next part is vital. It lays critical groundwork for, well, everything that comes later in the book.
Okay, what happens?
So while Mordecai is continuing his habit, just sitting quietly in the king's gate, a place of public gathering observation, he overhears two of the king's chamberlains, Bigthan and Teresh. They were keepers of the door, and they were angry, furious actually, and plotting to harm King Ahasuerus. Lay hands on him.
A conspiracy.
Yeah.
Right there at the palace gate.
Exactly. And Mordecai, showing incredible integrity and loyalty, even though no one asked him to, he reports this conspiracy to Queen Esther.
He goes through Esther.
Yes. And she, in turn, certifies it to the king. But importantly, she explicitly states that the information came from Mordecai, gives him the credit.
That's significant. So what was the outcome?
An investigation was immediately launched. The plot was confirmed. It was real.
And the conspirators?
Bigthan and Teresh were both hanged. Justice was swift.
And here's the detail that you said becomes incredibly significant later.
Yes. This event, this quiet act of loyalty by Mordecai exposing this plot, it was meticulously recorded, written down in the Book of the Chronicles, the official records, right there before the king.
So it's logged. Officially noted, even if not immediately rewarded.
Precisely. Often overlooked, that detail. But it shows how these seemingly small acts of integrity, they aren't forgotten. They're noted, preserved. Huge implications down the line.
Okay, so we've walked through the narrative. It's rich. It's compelling. But let's shift gears a bit.
Right. What does this all mean for us living our lives today?
Exactly. This story, Esther Chapter 2, it's not just ancient history. It feels like it offers profound, really actionable insights.
It absolutely does. Insights into how we can approach our own lives with, you know, faith and purpose. It kind of reveals a blueprint for how a larger plan can unfold through what we might just see as mundane or ordinary.
That's a great way to frame it. Let's start with that idea. Divine positioning through ordinary means.
Okay.
Esther's journey to the throne. I mean, on the surface, it could look like just being in the right place, being beautiful, catching the king's eye. Royal favor.
Sure, you could read it that way.
But when you connect it to the bigger picture, the rest of the story, it seems clear she was strategically placed. Think about it. An orphan raised by her cousin, just one among many maidens gathered.
Very ordinary circumstances, relatively speaking.
Right. Profoundly ordinary, yet they were the foundation for this extraordinary future she had no idea was coming.
And isn't it fascinating how often we look for these, like, grand, dramatic signs of God's purpose in our lives?
We do. Flashing lights, big neon signs.
Yeah. But Esther's story kind of whispers that divine positioning often happens in the quiet, unassuming places. It's almost like the power of proximity.
Proximity.
Yeah, just being in a certain place at a certain time. Not because you orchestrated some grand master plan, but just through everyday circumstances, following the path laid out.
So this raises a really important question for you, the listener.
Yeah.
What if that job you're in that feels mundane?
Or that unexpected move you had to make, even a difficult relationship.
What if it's actually a strategic placement? You might be in a position for such a time as this, just like Esther, even before you see the full picture.
Understanding this, internalizing it, can deeply encourage your obedience, right? It shifts your perspective from maybe questioning or resisting to trusting.
Trusting that even these seemingly ordinary circumstances can be used for extraordinary purposes, ways we can't even imagine yet.
Exactly. It builds that faith muscle.
Okay, building on that, there's also the power of quiet obedience with lasting impact.
Mm-hmm. This one's huge.
Esther's decision, following Mordecai's instruction to hide her Jewish identity. It wasn't cowardice, was it?
No, I think the text presents it as a strategic choice, rooted in wisdom about timing.
Right. She didn't just blurt it out when she arrived or try to use it for advantage before the right moment came later.
And this feels incredibly relevant today, doesn't it? I mean, think about our culture.
Yeah.
It often screams for instant expression, right? Constantly speak your truth, build your personal brand, put everything out there immediately.
Total transparency all the time.
Right. And Esther's patience, her restraint, it stands out as almost radical in that context.
So her quiet obedience wasn't about suppressing who she was.
No, more like guarding it, protecting it for the moment it would have the maximum impact, the necessary impact.
That makes sense. It reminds us that wisdom often looks like waiting, like observing, like holding back until the right moment.
Yeah. And this kind of obedience, this trust in divine timing, choosing maybe discretion over immediate disclosure, that can profoundly strengthen our faith. It helps us discern when to be obedient to those quieter promptings instead of just getting swept up by the loud demands around us.
Sometimes the most impactful actions aren't the ones everyone sees or applauds right away.
So true. Which brings us nicely to the next point, really.
Which is
doing the right thing without immediate recognition.
Ah, yes. Mordecai. He exposed a direct plot against the king's life. And that's heroic by any standard.
Absolutely. Life-saving.
Yet he wasn't immediately paraded through the streets, was he? No medal ceremony.
Nope. His integrity was noted simply by being recorded in the King's Chronicles. Written down, important, yes, but not celebrated publicly. Not yet.
He just did what was right. Quietly. Faithfully.
And this theme, this idea that faithfulness isn't always public or immediately recognized, it resonates so deeply in our own lives, I think. Well, think about your work or your family, your community. How many times do you do the right thing? Maybe take the high road, go the extra mile.
And nobody notices, or at least nobody says anything.
Exactly. It feels like it goes unseen. But Esther's story, especially Mordecai's part here, reminds us that these acts of quiet integrity, they matter immensely. They matter to a greater purpose, and they are not forgotten, even if people don't acknowledge them right away.
So continuing to act with integrity, with obedience, even when the spotlight isn't on you, that builds profound faith.
I believe it does. It encourages us to be faithful, not for the applause, not for the immediate reward, but because it aligns with something deeper. A deeper sense of purpose, a trust in that unseen hand guiding things.
That's powerful. Okay, one more key takeaway here. Preparation precedes purpose.
Yes. Back to Esther's year-long prep time.
That year of purification. It was incredibly long, incredibly detailed. This wasn't a quick makeover show.
Definitely not. It was an intentional, maybe even grueling season.
And it equipped her, didn't it? Not just physically for the royal court, making her presentable.
Right. But likely, mentally, emotionally, perhaps even spiritually, for the pivotal, high-stakes role she would eventually have to play, a role she couldn't have foreseen.
Those seasons of waiting in our own lives, or development, or what feels like really slow progress, they can be so frustrating.
Oh, incredibly frustrating. Especially today, in a world demanding instant results. We tend to see these periods as, like, obstacles or delays, wasted time.
But maybe they're not. Like Esther's year-long preparation, that rigorous routine, maybe these times are absolutely crucial.
Crucial for developing character, resilience, skills we don't even know we'll need yet. Think about those purification seasons in your own life.
Like periods of intense training, or maybe unexpected setbacks that forced you to learn something new.
Or even just quiet moments of learning, study, reflection. Preparation is rarely wasted, even when its ultimate purpose isn't clear at the time.
That's a thought that can really encourage us, can't it? To view these periods differently.
Yes. To see development, learning, even quiet contemplation as vital steps in our journey, it strengthens our trust in God's timing, God's process.
And it reinforces our willingness to be obedient to the path, even when it feels like a detour or a waiting room.
It teaches us that our readiness, our character, is just as important as the opportunity itself when it arrives.
So bring it all together then.
Yeah.
Esther chapter 2 really shows us that purpose can emerge from the quietest places.
Mm-hmm. And faithfulness in what seem like small things, small acts of obedience, lays this profound foundation for great things later on.
It's a powerful testament, really, to how even the most unassuming acts of obedience can be intricately woven into a larger, more magnificent plan.
Yeah. So whether you feel like you're currently in a season of waiting, maybe diligently preparing for something you can't yet see.
Or perhaps you're walking in a role you didn't necessarily seek out, didn't plan for.
This deep dive reminds you that the larger plan, God's plan, can use timing, humility, and quiet obedience in incredibly powerful ways.
Even when the spotlight isn't on you.
Especially when the spotlight isn't on you, perhaps. It's about recognizing and trusting that unseen hand in the visible, everyday circumstances of your life.
Our deepest conviction here is that this kind of insight, digging into these stories, isn't just for understanding ancient texts.
Right, it's not just history.
It's for enriching your present circumstances right now and helping to shape your future with a renewed sense of purpose and, ultimately, faith.
Well said. So maybe the question to leave you with today is this.
Okay.
Thinking about Esther's journey, her ordinary beginnings, her quiet obedience, her long preparation, what ordinary or perhaps even challenging part of your current life might actually be part of a strategic positioning by God for something far bigger than you can imagine right now?